This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pancava. Father David McBrier came to North Carolina almost two decades ago and has headed up Roman Catholic churches in the Triangle. Father McBrier retired this summer from Immaculate Conception Church in Durham. During his time there, he reached out and drew in a growing number of Latino parishioners. He's also been involved in a push for better housing and living conditions for the poor in Durham. And Father McBrier is joining us to talk about the changes he has seen in the church, both in his parish in Durham and more broadly in the Catholic Church. Welcome, Father McBrier.
Thank you, Melinda. It's nice to be here.
And if you care to join our conversation about changes in the church in North Carolina and in the world, and perhaps in your community, the number is 1-877-962-9862. Well, Father McBrier, you are retiring, as I say, from Immaculate Conception Church in Durham, retired just a few weeks ago. And one of the big things that you leave is a congregation that reached out and brought in many Latino families.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Not only myself, of course. I belong to a fraternity of brothers, and since coming to Immaculate Conception 9 years ago, we knew that our vision as Franciscans was to be people of peace and justice, people who were concerned with the integrity of creation, men who tried to live the gospel by drawing other people in to minister alongside of us. So our agenda in coming to North Carolina, especially to Immaculate Conception, was precisely that. And one of the concerns we had, of course, was who's on the outside? Who are the voiceless? Who are those who are disenfranchised? And so with my brothers, we began to put that agenda into motion.
And how did you reach out? What were the challenges in doing that? You identified that there was this growing population of Latinos in the area.
Well, if you open the doors, they'll come. The Latinos are there, always looking for continuing their religious faith tradition. And I think it's a spirit, an attitude of welcoming them, of embracing them, of believing that they have more to give you than you have to give them. That what they offer is a rich, rich culture, a deep religious faith, a sense of family, a work ethic, and they want to belong. And so we, it was easy. They were there, and some of the challenges, of course, were knowing how to provide for them and how to respond to their needs. But as I say, it's a two-way street, and so they brought us a great deal. Brought us a great deal to our community.
It was one of those challenges linguistic? Was it a matter of
absolutely, language? Absolutely. And we were fortunate that among the three brothers that we had ministering there at the beginning, one of them was bilingual, and that now in the parish, two of the brothers there are bilingual as well. I went away to Bolivia to study Spanish for a month, and it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks, but I did my best.
Well, that has been an issue over the decades in the Catholic Church. At one time, Masses were only held in Latin and then went to the vernacular in different countries, English in the U.S. So here it is, having to go for a different vernacular to reach out to a segment of the population.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Were there any challenges besides language in order to integrate Latinos into that church?
Well, the culture is something that is incredibly important. It's the Latinos, the Spanish-speaking people, have a way of doing things that sometimes that are unfamiliar. We always kid about Spanish time. Nothing begins on time with the Latinos, and so that's always a struggle of understanding. Also, there's a certain sense of, wouldn't call it the superstitious, I would call it the miraculous. There's a certain basic human body language that they have in terms of babies and kissing them and blessing them, and holy water is a very important part of their ritual, which is beautiful. They have many of these very basic religious experiences.
So would their baptisms be different?
No, they're not different, but they're certainly dressed up. I'll say that. the ritual itself is the same, but it has a depth of meaning for them, which sometimes it's difficult for an Anglo to tap into.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with Father David McBriar, who has just retired as pastor of Immaculate Conception Church in Durham. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-877-962-9862. How is the Catholic Church changing in North Carolina? What does it mean to be Catholic in the state? Has that changed? And who will keep the role of the church vital in North Carolina in the future? 1-877-962-9862 is the number. You've been quoted as saying, Father McBriar, that about integration in the church, that we don't expect it to be done overnight.
Yes.
Does that mean, are there still separations? Is there the Latino Mass and then the Mass in English, and nary the two worlds meet, or?
No, I don't think that the integration happens on many levels. It's not just a level of language, but it's a level of understanding family. It's a level of understanding poverty, a level of understanding how this community can enrich us, how we can enrich one another. And so it's complex. Integrating cultures without the one culture losing its sense of identity is important. It's a different kind of immigration pattern that's happened in this century as opposed to the last century. Don't forget that when my ancestors came to this country as immigrants in the beginning of the 20th century, they brought their own priests with them. So whether they were, speaking of Catholics, whether they were French or Italian or Polish, they brought their own priests with them from Europe to minister to them and to help the integration process. That was not the case with the Latinos, and so they have come here, as it were, alone. And it's a matter now for us to embrace them and to find ways of helping them to maintain their language, maintain their culture, and at the same time to know that it's important that they be integrated into an American way of life. And they want to do that.
As I understand it, one other difference perhaps in the approach to church is that churches they may have come from in Mexico, you've said, were very much the priests ran the show.
Yes.
And here you're saying there was much more involvement, not just from the priests, but from parishioners.
Well, that's true widely in the Catholic Church. Since the Second Vatican Council, one of the most important, if you will, recoveries has been the priesthood of the laity, the importance in our Franciscan tradition, we call it partners in ministry. The most important thing we share is our common baptism. And that baptism calls us to be good stewards, good ministers. And so that involvement, raising up leaders among the people, is critically important, and even more so for the Latinos, as I say, because you're right that they went to church to receive, and they didn't see their responsibility to lead. And so one of the most important efforts and challenges that's been going on has been to take young people away for a retreat to talk to them about techniques of leadership, responsibilities in leadership. And just yesterday in the paper, there was a large assembly at St. Francis Church in Raleigh, again directed toward leadership in the Latino community.
And politics.
Absolutely.
Seeking political power.
Absolutely. I mean, if one doesn't have political power, then she's adrift in the sea. Mm. So one has to be aware that it's important for us to maintain the human rights, the dignity of the person. And to a large extent, one of the most important things that has happened in Durham in my tenure there, certainly not because of me, I've been a part of it and a willing and an exciting part of it, as has our parish, is Durham Can, which is congregations, assemblies, and neighborhoods that come together to see how, in fact, they can change the system so that every person's dignity is respected.
You know, is that a particularly Franciscan approach? Because that would be where you come from.
Well, I don't mean to toot the Franciscan horn.
Well, you're allowed to here if you care to.
Thanks. But our history has been one of being with the little people and realizing that according to our tradition. It's tradition of St. Francis, the tradition of the Franciscan friars. It's always been out there at the barricades. And that's true for many religious communities as well. So it's very, very difficult to say what separates us. But our concern has been to care for issues of peace and justice, the integrity of creation, partners in ministry, and we like to think that we do that pretty well, and that we're grateful for the, if you will, the grace or the charism that enables us to do that.
We're talking with Father David McBrier about his years at Immaculate Conception Church in Durham. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. You were written up, you're one of several pastors in the South who've written up in a book called Travelers on the Journey. And I want to turn a corner here, and it talks a bit about you being a Franciscan. You were talking about how, as a Franciscan, it's more a robe that you would wear rather than the clerical collar in most circumstances. Is that?
That's true. The Franciscan habit, we call it, has identified us through the centuries, and particularly that's true for the Latinos, if I might say that. That the padre is someone they recognize right away in that brown robe, for good as ill, and ill. I mean, if one talks about the founding the development of the West and the friars that came there, Father Junipero Serra and the others who brought the Catholic tradition to that part of the country and indeed to Central and South America. But our Franciscan habit is not just a liturgical vestment, but it's something that identifies us deeply, and we see ourselves, certainly those of us who are ordained, and many of our brothers are not ordained ministers, and so we have a sense of fraternity and then mission.
Right. Well, I mention that because you wrote, or you were quoted in this interview as saying that you don't usually wear the clerical collar, which many people would associate with a priest, the white and black.
Yes.
And that during the recent sex scandals, you commented that when you were traveling, especially in New York and Boston, where those sex abuse cases were especially severe, you were almost embarrassed to wear that clerical collar.
I think that's true. It was and continues to be a very difficult time for us, as you can imagine, not only for us, but for those who are victims, have been victims of that. But I think it's true not only for us friars, but I think also for the diocesan clergy. Those were incredibly difficult times. And so, if you will, there was a kind of embarrassment associated with it. But I wouldn't want to go too far with that. I think that it continues to be a symbol of men, speaking of clerics, men who are servants, who minister, who give themselves for the people and for the church.
Yeah. Well, you were quoted as saying that, yes, you know, you had done this work, but you experienced prejudice because of the acts of a few, but you were lumped in with them. And
that's right.
Felt some kinship to those who get prejudice because of their skin color.
That's right. I think that's true. It was there were moments. Oftentimes, these are isolated moments, but nevertheless, they're searing. When you can understand a minority. Here I am, white, educated man in a developed country, and I can understand. Prejudice and can understand how those who have been labeled as bearing, let's say, the scar of an entire community, and so that was embarrassing.
Yeah. How did your congregation react to the sex abuse scandal?
Our congregation in Durham?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, we did a couple of things. One is that we tried to be as open as possible about it. And so we held general meetings, two general meetings, a dialogue for people to ask questions, for us to make statements about it. And one of them was with teenagers and their parents. And that was a particularly humbling meeting because one had to lay out the sinfulness of his colleagues And the teenagers were very silent, and yet many of them spoke up. How did this happen? Raising the same kinds of questions that all of us raised and that are even now being sorted out. But they were open meetings, and I think that, as Tip O'Neill once said, politics is always local. Religion is always local, too. And if that scandal is not happening where you are, where you're worshiping, where you're educating your children, then in one sense it can be remote.
Mm. A related issue that did come up in a lot of discussion about the sex abuse scandals was who should be priests. The word from the Vatican, of course, is that only men, only celibate men. And yet you have staked out somewhat different ground, or at least have disagreed with that. Your quote is saying that you believe in the priesthood. I believe that the priest is the public sacramentalizer, but I don't believe that one has to be celibate to do that.
Well, of course, that has to be true, because the Eastern clergy are not celibate. There are many in the Diocese of Raleigh, I'm not sure how many, three or four, I believe now, men who have... married men who have come to the Roman Catholic Church from either the Episcopal Church or from another sacramental tradition.
And do they remain married?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So celibacy is a requirement, a disciplinary requirement in the Roman Catholic Church for some. Certainly to be ordained, if you are not married, you cannot be ordained and then marry. Otherwise... the discipline of the church is that you're excluded now. You've separated yourself from the institution. But I think that one of the things that's happened to me in my certainly 9 years in Durham is to work with wonderful, wonderful men and women from other faiths, the Protestant tradition, the Jewish tradition, from now recently with the Muslim community. And I see married men and women raising children who embarrass me in terms of their devotion to the ministry, and who teach me so very much about what it means to be a family man and a woman, and then be a minister of the gospel. So I see it existentially, concretely happening, and I say to myself, well, if there are those who within the Roman Catholic Church wish to be married, let's hope that someday that discipline is lifted.
Is that a recent change in your thinking? Have you thought that way for a long time, or was that just after seeing this in Durham?
I think I believed that all along. Of course, in joining a fraternity of brothers, one of the conditions for belonging to the fraternity of brothers is that we're celibate because we live together in a community of brothers, and so that's part of our charism, if you will, built into our charism. But I think that my association, especially in the interfaith community, has reinforced what I probably have felt all my life.
Yeah. Do you see any change in the church happening?
Oh, that's hard to predict, isn't it? Who would have ever predicted the Second Vatican Council? Who would have ever predicted John the 23rd? Who would have ever predicted some of these charismatic moments? And so one of the great gifts is that you can't foretell the future in detail. It's one of God's great gifts. So I pray for it to happen, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I pray for the church to continue to be a witness of the gospel.
Yeah, and do you think it might happen in the face of a shortage of priests, at least in this country?
Well, that's a very important consideration, and I chafe under that, the Eucharist is denied people because of the shortage of priests. And I pray that someday that we'll get our priorities straight. Mm-hmm.
We'll continue talking with Father David McBriar about his 18 years as a priest here in North Carolina, about changes in the church, both in the state and in general. And we'll take your calls at 1-877-962-9862. 1-877-962-9862. What does it mean to you to be Catholic in North Carolina? What direction would you like to see the Catholic Church take? 1-877-962-9862 is our number. More of our conversation just ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava, and we are talking with Father David McBriar, who recently retired from Immaculate Conception Church in Durham. He has been a priest in North Carolina for 18 years. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. And just before the break, we were talking about your views on celibacy for mm-hmm. priests and how there is this shortage of priests, and yet the Church, the Vatican, does not change its view on say, non-celibate men being priests or dare I say, women mm-hmm. being priests. I want to talk now about how that might play into something closer to home, and that is in the Raleigh Diocese. The current bishop, Joseph Gossman, is considered a moderate, and he has to retire because he's turned 75. The Vatican will be choosing his successor. And the report, according to reports, the word is the Vatican wants somebody who's more conservative.
Gosh, I don't know what the Vatican wants. I can't tell you that. But I sure hope that we get somebody like Bishop Gossman, a pastoral man who, in my judgment, is one of the greatest listeners that I have ever met. And I just hope that there's someone pastoral and caring as Bishop Gossman is, and he's been quite a leader.
He is
quite a leader.
Yeah, and he remains in the job until the replacement is chosen.
That's right.
Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
You've been quoted as saying that whoever becomes bishop, that choice will perhaps have more effect on the lives of Catholics in North Carolina than who the Pope is.
Oh, I think so. I think so. I think that the bishop is really the pastor of the diocese. And we who are priests and serve in local churches, we are his delegates. We serve at his with him. It's a collegiate act. He is as bishop, and the presbyterate of the diocese is a collegial body together, and so we serve him. So how he leads us, what his spirit is, how he pastorally calls us to the issues of the day is critically important for us. And so our prayer is that we'll have somebody who will be able to really see the gospel as important to be lived out in the streets as well as in the churches.
It's been on some areas of doctrine, I might say, that that perhaps the Vatican, at least according to what I've mm-hmm. read on this, differs from, and the new pope in particular, differs from what the bishop here has staked out as positions. For instance, certainly as a Catholic bishop, he opposes abortion but did not mm-hmm. oppose giving communion to those who would say they were not opposed to abortion.
Right. He joined with other bishops, too, in that position. His position was a letter that saying that he didn't want to use the Eucharist as a weapon to distinguish the integrity of the person. He said that the prayer that we say at the Mass is, Lord, I am not worthy to receive you. It doesn't say, Lord, my neighbor is not worthy to receive you. And so he took, again, a very pastoral position on that, which I applaud him for.
Hmm. He's also quoted as saying a few years back of the last mm-hmm. pope that he didn't think that the last pope had given enough thought to the— well, I don't want to put words in his mouth. Mm-hmm. On the issue of women becoming priests, he said that he hadn't heard the Vatican and that pope give reasons for why he outright rejected the idea
right.
of women.
I believe this is very careful. Let me try to be careful in responding to it. He said that the reasons that were given were difficult for him were not persuasive, the reasons that were given. He said, but he is a man who is faithful and obedient, and therefore he accepts the decision of the Holy Father. And so I think that's an important thing. Theology has always been a critically important part of the Catholic tradition, and Jesus came to take away our sins, not our reason. So I think that it's important that that we continue to think about these kinds of things.
Is there room for that dissension?
In
of
terms,
a sort.
In
of
terms
a sort.
Of, yes, I think that there is that one can have faithful dissent within the community of believers. I think that from the beginning of time, this has been shown to be that which advances the cause of the Church. As one reflects and discusses, there's moral discourse that happens, and the light goes on and one comes to a conclusion he or she might not otherwise have come to. Okay.
Well, we have to come to a conclusion for our interview, but okay. Thank you for joining us today, Father.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Father David McBriar just recently retired as priest of Immaculate Conception Church in Durham. He continues to work in a variety of positions, including theologian in residence at Cardinal Gibbons High School in Raleigh.